Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Mike Lameco from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Fun About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your
weekly co-hosts
for this journey through all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. It's been a fantastic, fantastic run, and today is a very special day. Actually, Mary's book was just published. It's officially Woo-hoo! Out today. Congratulations, Yay! Mary, on your book, Speed Brewing.
Sweet.
You may recognize that voice. That is John LaPala, our good
How
friend
are
from
you guys?
BitterNesters.com. This weekend was the National Home Brewers Conference. Unfortunately, Mary and I were unable to make it. We did have a table that we were trying to be at, but a lot of things going on, including her book, and we served some cider at a festival. We sorely missed being there.
I have a new day job.
Very sad about that. She has a new day job.
Yes.
She was in training.
And in a meeting. So I cannot complain. I'm very excited about the new job.
Congratulations.
But thank you. But I could not make NHC. It was sad.
My heart hurt.
That's true.
I wanted
me too.
To be there so bad. But your dad was there, and he was yes. adopted by the New York City Home Brewers Guild. He went in our stead and rocked out, and there were some disturbing pictures of other friends with your dad. I don't even know how to feel about it. But a lot of our good friends did win some pretty significant things at the National Home Brewers Conference. Mm-hmm. Among them are?
Well, first off, should we do the biggest first?
Yeah,
I
go
think
ahead.
So.
Let's go big.
So Homebrewer of the Year Award is awarded to the best beer.
It's the best of show for the National Brewers competition.
And it is our friends Oscar Norlander, Peter Salmon, and Eric Norlander.
Yeah. And they have been on the show twice talking about sour beers. I forget which episodes by number right now.
I'm going to bring those up in a sec.
They're good friends of my store, too.
They're fantastic. They're
really great
they
guys.
Make amazing beers. They're well knowledgeable, and we're so proud to have some East Coast love. Nick Ladd, another member of the New York City Brewers Guild, good friend. Our old friend Matt Chan, who moved to the West Coast, was another winner.
And then you, who else?
Who else?
Carl Weiss.
Carl Weiss, yeah. From
New York
Jersey.
City, man.
From Jersey.
Close
same
enough.
Thing.
The sixth borough. That in Philly. Uh-oh. Did I say that?
God. Okay. So, on that note. All right. So, we have... actually, Peter, Oscar, and Erlander are some variation of the three. They weren't all able to make it both shows. But we actually had them on episode 29, called Wood from the Hood, and episode 107, Sweep and Sour.
That's right. And they do... I mean, they have this old barrel... from Oscar and Eric's father vineyard in California, and they've just been putting stuff through there, and over the years it has got this magic touch. Now it's like it's the Midas barrel.
Some of the best sours you ever try. Whenever they bring them in, it's like, oh my god, you guys.
Yeah, it's pretty yeah.
so good.
There's lots of other good things to taste, especially coming up. We have an event here in New York City called Summer Solstice at the Arrogant Swine.
I can't say it either.
It's my fault because I'm saying it wrong. It's actually Solstice Session at the Arrogant Swine. And it is a full pig roast. We're going to have about 11 home brews and 14 pro brews on a tap. And it's going to be in the afternoon from 1 to 5. There are 28 tickets left on sale. And you can go to... JoshuaMBernstein.com and get a direct link to it. I don't think it has its own website, but Joshua Bernstein, myself, and Tyson Ho are hosting this little
jamboree. We're pouring there, too.
Yeah.
We have a saison. It's a rose hip saison called the First Rose of Summer. So
that's exciting.
Cool.
I love this festival because I love session beers. I like, I'm usually in it for the long haul and hanging out, and less than 5% beers make me happy. Low ABV, big flavor.
And other
beverages. Mary's got some talking about, but we're going to go into a little bit of those a little later, I think.
I don't know. I'm going to say them now.
I'll say them
We'll
now.
Come back and revisit a little bit of my...
We'll visit the how, but tell
exactly.
us the what now.
All right, so I made three beverages for Solstice Session. First is a strawberry Sima. So actually, the first, they're all three either directly from my book, my new book, Speed Brewing, or inspired by the book. They all will ferment. They're all happily bubbling away at 77 degrees in our middle room.
Warm fermenting.
Yes, which we're going to talk about later.
That's a theme for this show.
So I made what's called a Mansika Sima. I'm probably totally butchering the pronunciation of that. But it's basically a strawberry Sima, and that's a fermented strawberry lemonade.
What is the word Mansika?
I think that's strawberry. Well,
is it?
Yeah.
I wouldn't even know what language.
Sima.
In what language?
Is this I don't know.
Swedish?
Swedish. Okay, that makes sense.
No, Finnish.
Finnish speaking Swedish.
And then I also made a tutti frutti tropical fruit short mead made with three different types of tropical fruit or fruit herbal tea. And then I also made a rockin' rhubarb ginger cider.
Nice. You know what I love about you, Mary, besides those boots?
I'm wearing my hip rain boots today because it was pouring earlier.
So many drinks, so many liquids, so many beverages I've never heard of until I met you. And I mean, they're all awesome, but it's great. You know, I'm like, hey, beer, wine. No, it keeps going. It just keeps going. And it's cool. And you can make them.
Yeah,
right.
They're super easy.
They're all traditionally made by people, right? Like at home.
Yeah.
Year round.
And I was excited because last year I also made three beverages. One was actually a strawberry Sima, and I did not get to go because I was really ill for last year's summer solstice. But all three kegs kicked very quickly, so I'm excited to see, you know, spread the love of fast fermented, easy ass. Delicious beverages.
Sessionable.
That's right. They stand out in a world full of beer, which is pretty fun.
And then the following Saturday, we have another super fun homebrew pro brew event that you helped put together, John.
These are both second annuals, by the way.
This is the second annual.
We're both going into our second annual. So what is the second annual event that you're doing, John?
This is a second annual New York City Brewers Pro-Am. And it's, as far as I know, the only Pro-Am in New York City at the current time. I'm sure there'll be more. Last year we called it Brew Pit, which was passion, inspiration, technique. And we took the pit out. Even though it's still passion, inspiration, technique, we thought, you know, we're going to make this a proper Pro-Am, along with my good friend Robert Sherrill, who's also one of my customers and one of the heads of the Bruminaries Homebrew Club.
Not just that, he has a podcast as well that we really love.
Yeah, called Brew to Share. That we've both been on
it.
Yeah. You'll be there.
You'll be Mary.
No. One day you'll make it, Mary. One day you'll be somebody.
So yeah, brewtoshare.com. He's great. We got together just to we wanted to do some sort of homebrew event, but there are a lot of the ones where you just go and you try 25 homebrews, and they're great, and they're well-run, and they're really fun, but we're like, well, why throw another one into the mix? They're already done well. So owning the homebrew shop has allowed me to know a lot of the head brewers and owners of the breweries that are opening in New York City now. And we've approached them and said, hey, we throw you a homebrewer. They'll brew with you, and we'll see what happens. And they were really receptive. They were like, yeah, let's do it. So the whole idea of this is we got homebrewers to meet with these pro breweries. They did a collaboration beer that they brewed together. The brewery's also going to bring one of their beers, and the homebrewer is going to bring one of their own beers. So each table will have three beers.
So each pair up
is three.
Awesome.
So out of two comes three. And there's five different breweries that are going to be there with five different homebrewers. We picked the homebrewers at random. We had people sign up. We had them write down what brewery they would like to be with. We actually didn't tell them what breweries were involved. We just asked them what breweries they would like to be with.
So any New York City brewery.
Any New York City brewery, yeah. I want to be with Russian River. No, that's not going to happen. We picked the names out of a hat. We picked the five names out of a hat, and we then paired them with the breweries that they had picked. And it turned out that the ones that we picked out of the hat pretty much wanted the breweries that we had that was being represented.
That's
so
great.
So I have the list here.
Very serendipitous.
We have Finback Brewery.
Right.
They're great. They were there last year, and they're paired up with Glenn Couples. You know Glenn? Guitar player
in the home musicians.
We got Greenpoint Beer and Ale, which is Dirk the Norseman, Chris Prout. And he's with Justin Wilson.
Yeah,
Justin's great.
Yep. Justin's brewing with them, and they're doing all Brett.
Makes sense. That sounds like Justin's alley. Yeah.
And then other half was paired up with Simon Tepes.
Also.
Who's also a hop IPA, forward beer, yeah. hop forward. So they, I actually brewed with them.
Really?
Yeah, we did the pilot at my store, and it was a blast. Like, Sam from other half knows his stuff. Mm-hmm. It was really, really, really cool. And Simon knows his stuff, so it was a great day.
Yeah, Simon is a multiple award-winning home brewer for his IPA. It's straight up IPA or some version of an IPA.
Yep. It's a hell of a guy, like a friend. Then we have Rockaway Brewing, who we Bitter and Esters and the Brewminaries brewed with over the spring. So Ethan came in with Katie Sloan. And they did a dark mild together. So, again, they brewed on our pilot system. A lot of these breweries don't have pilot systems, so we let them use ours. And the last one was Six Point. And it was Marcus from Six Point. He used to work with us at Bitter and Esters. He used to be one of our employees.
Oh, nice.
He brewed with Jason Gerz. Do you know Jason? Jason's a really great home brewer.
Yeah.
And they did a black sessionable IPA, I would say. Cool. So it's going to be really exciting. The event is going to be at Covenhoven over in Prospect Heights on Klassen Avenue. And it's going to be June 27th. There are two sessions. I always forget when they are. They're from one is from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. and the other one's from 3:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. The tickets are $30 or $35 at the door. There's only 50 tickets per session, so it's actually pretty. It's going to sell out pretty quick. You get a glass, you get a pretzel, and you get unlimited tasting of 15 beers. Plus, I'll be pouring a beer, and Robert will be pouring a beer. So you have 17 beers that you can try. And it's the cool thing is that we put these. A lot of these small breweries. We're homebrewers. They started off as homebrewers. They went the extra mile. They became a brewery, became pro breweries. And now they're meeting with homebrewers, and the homebrewers are getting to see how the whole process works.
Yeah. We're meeting former selves.
Former selves. And then the winner, oh, this is the best part, the person that gets picked by audience choice. Last year, got to brew at 508 with Mr. Kuzmi, and that was Frank Lockwood.
Yeah.
And Frank's a hell of a guy, and he totally nailed it. He was really great. He won with Single Cut. The person this year gets to actually brew a production batch on the brewery that they won with. So with the beer that they made in collaboration.
So what size are they generally making now then for the competition?
They all did 5 gallon. Well, on my system it's 15 gallons. Okay. So they did 15 gallons, but they only need to bring 5 gallons.
Right.
So I guess the brewery will bring whatever they have that they want to do with the table. And then the home brewers actually got money to make a 5 gallon batch from us. And then they did 15 gallon batches, whatever pilots that they had. So, but when they do get to do the production batch, I'm assuming it's going to be 20 to 30 barrels. Like it's going to be a whatever the brewery.
Sure.
Well, Rockaway is a 5 barrel system.
Rockaway is 5, yeah. 6 points, 15 or 20.
15, 20, yeah. What's.
Other half is 15.
Other half is 15 with 7.
Finback is 20.
Finback's 20, and then Green Point is
5.
5.
Yep.
So, yeah, I guess whatever it is, they'll put it on their tap room or sell it to selected accounts. But it's a really great opportunity. Already, every one of these brewers has said to me, this has been such a great thing. Without even winning or anything, they feel they already won because they got to go past being home brewers and going to see what actually happens in the brewing thing. And I think they learned it's a lot of cleaning.
Yeah.
And I made them clean at my store. Usually if you come to brew on our brew and premise at the store, we do the cleaning. I'm like, no, you're gonna get the whole right. experience.
90% cleaning, 20% paperwork, and the rest is brewing.
The rest is brewing. The minus 10%.
Yeah, right. Minus more than that.
But it's going to be fun. It's June 27th. It's coming up really soon. So it's just another fun event in the boroughs. It's going to be awesome.
But we're lucky to have these events. I mean, not only opportunities for homebrewers, but also opportunities for the public to taste local homebrew and, you know, some stuff that they can't get anywhere else and meet some brewers. And
The cool thing, too, is these collaboration brews, you're not going to get them anywhere else. That's it.
Right.
You know, this is you're going into an event that's going to be really unique stuff. Mm-hmm. At Covenhoven, which is really such a nice place to have a beer anyway.
Four of them are entirely unique because they won't be made again on a large production
scale. Four of them will lose.
Four of them, yeah.
One will win.
Yep.
They'll all be awesome. I mean, I know that.
So when you and Robert sat down and decided to do a pro-am event, how did you choose the venue? So Covenhoven also is a local bar. It's great. They have a nice indoor area. It's in Prospect Heights near your store. Yep. So Brooklyn. And then they have a great backyard. We were actually just
there last night.
Actual grass
and herb that you can just pick and add to your cheese that they serve, which was awesome.
We were doing that last night, weren't we? We were grabbing thyme and putting it on the cheese.
Yep. Rosemary.
They chose us. That's the funny thing. Like when they opened, Robert went in and talked to them. They were like, how would you like to do a homebrew event here? And then Robert came to us because we're his LHBS, and I said, yeah, again, I said, let's do something different, let's do something unique. And pro-ams aren't exactly the newest thing in the world, but it's new for the area, and it's so great how much things are actually growing. I mean, even from last year, this year when I approached the breweries, it wasn't like, I really got to sell you this idea. They're like, yeah. It was either yeah or no. No, we can't do it. We asked Brooklyn. They were very close to doing it. Gabe was like, yo, we want to do it. Can't do it. Maybe next year. So hopefully next year we'll have Brooklyn, which would be so cool.
They finally got a small little tippy thing to play with.
They have a half barrel system, right?
Yeah.
But their projections, I think their production, it was a matter of timing. Their production schedule is like.
That's what it was.
Yeah. They're keeping up with stuff.
I should probably approach them now.
Just be like, hey, put on the calendar next year. Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's one aspect of this that I also think is fun, coming from the other direction as a pro brewer. And I was talking to Heather McReynolds of Six Point yesterday. Is like, I can't remember I remember what it was like being not novice, but being a home brewer in this world. And what I can't do is imagine what it's like to be that today, because the options are and the education is out there in a way different way than it was when I started as a home brewer, and like being able to empathize or sympathize is a different thing. Yeah. If this is making any sense at all, but
you can move faster nowadays.
Yeah.
I have people come in and they're like, first brew. One guy came in, first brew Pliny the Elder clone, all grain. And I'm like, okay, well, you could do that on the moon if you want, also to make it more difficult.
right.
And he nailed it. He nailed it. Yeah, he studied it. He made sure everything was the way it should be, and it was fantastic. There's just as people can bypass a lot of mistakes now from other people's mistakes, and that's brilliant. That's what education is, right?
Absolutely.
In the long run,
it's great.
And on that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more
Femen About It over here.
Out there, it's Steve Jenkins. I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Femen About It. We're here in the studio with our friend John LaPala of Bitter Nesters. Hey! And we were talking about the fun of the Pro-Am competition that he hosts. This is the second annual, and there's lots of other stuff going on in his store. You just had recent experience with a new device called the Pico Brew.
Pico Brew.
What is the Pico Brew?
The Pico Brew is, I've had it described to me as a bread machine of brewing. It is a 2.5 gallon system that you add grain There's four areas for hop additions, so wherever you want it to be in the boil. And you have a 5-gallon keg that you use as a, basically a hot liquor tank. Put everything in. You set up the recipe online. They have a situation online. It has to be set up to Wi-Fi or Ethernet, which I think is amazing. It's like you can't get away from the Internet. And you hit go. And it does heats up the water. It does the mash. It does the boil. It does the hop additions. And it gives you hot wort. And then you cool it down and you ferment it.
So what you set up online is basically the hopping schedule. Yeah. But I mean, you fill in your grist. What's the efficiency?
The efficiency, I got about 70% with water additions, with adding some brewing salts to the water to help bring down the pH, which everyone should do with New York water anyway, because New York water is so soft. Mm-hmm. So I throw up a couple of grams of gypsum, and you're going to increase your efficiency. And the beers come out really good. You guys had some yesterday.
Yeah,
we had two beers that we made with it so far. And we've been doing demos, and one of them is going to be over at Jimmy's 43. And I'm try as I might.
In the East Village.
In the East Village. I'm trying to find the date of it because we just made the date. July 7th at 6:30.
July 7th, 6:30
at the back room of Jimmy's 43. It's going to be a free demo. If you go to bitternesters.com, we'll have more information on that. But you'll get to see it in action. So, it's a cool little thing. It's great for breweries because breweries can do pilot batches with it. So breweries use them a lot. And it's great for small apartments. It's the size of a microwave oven. And it's easy to clean. It makes good beer. It's cool because you go to work in the morning, you hit play, you come back, you cool down your wort, you ferment it, and you get beer. It's just a nice thing. It's
a very hands-off process.
It's a very hands-off process.
You're responsible for transferring it to your fermenter and cooling it and transferring to your sanitizer.
Well, some people will ferment in the keg itself, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Although, I've known a lot of people that have done that.
Well, I don't mind fermenting in the keg, but they also have you serve it out of the keg it's fermented. You're going to pour the Trub off.
Right.
I prefer, if I'm going to do that, I would probably rack off the keg into another keg and then carbonate that way. But they actually have you even adding priming sugar. It's supposed to be like as few steps as possible.
And for you, when you do your brewing salts, do you mix them up in the keg itself, in the HLT?
Yeah. So it's a recirculation process with heating. So I throw in
infusion mash.
Yeah. And then...
what does that stand for, Chris?
Recirculation infusion mash system.
Okay.
As opposed to a HERMS heat exchange...
Heat exchange recirculation mash system. and then sometimes I say system at the end, so I'll say a HERM system, which is saying
that's a double system.
System. Yeah.
Pizza.
I should say HERM. It's a HERM system. That would work.
A HERM system.
So does the Pico Brew give off much heat?
You know, it doesn't. I haven't noticed it. It doesn't. You barely know the darn thing's doing anything. It's kind of like a dishwasher.
Yeah.
It goes through these cycles, and I like the fact that it's completely editable. You can really set it up. 4-hop additions is enough for most beers. You can dry hop if you want with it. You can add whirl flock in one of the hop things if you want to do that. At first, I was kind of like, oh, what is this? And then after using it a couple of times, and I've been brewing forever, it's fun. It's kind of fun. It's like you run over there, oh, look, it's boiling. You know, it's really cool. And what I do is I brew while I'm brewing with the Pico system. So I brew another beer. And so I got two brews going. It's like having an assistant.
Yeah.
It's my assistant brewer.
Yeah.
And we're happy with the beer's quality. The company itself, we contributed to the Kickstarter. They're really nice people. They've been really... forthcoming, and they're trying to do something new and different, so I'm totally into it. It's fun. We'll see. Come to Jimmy's, July 7th.
And that is, because we were talking about, Chris and I dropped by the store yesterday after previewing the new Kelso.
That's right.
Heartland Brewery, Tasting Kelso. Room.
There's a home
How exciting
tasting
is
there.
That?
As we're going to be opening
I never have
next
to go
week
home now.
Stuff. I know.
I think next week. Maybe we can.
And more on that as it comes. But we were talking about how it's difficult to brew in the summer because not only, like, I don't want to touch my oven on. I don't want to boil anything, right?
7 minutes to the end. We're to our topic of today's show.
That's why
minutes left.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I didn't make beer for the summer solstice. Why instead I made a cider, a Sima, which is a sugar-based beverage, and a short mead, because none of those things, the only thing I had to do is boil enough water in a teapot to make a tea.
Right. And that's not going to kill
you. So it didn't heat our apartment. It wasn't painfully hot in our apartment with something boiling for an hour.
That's a good point about the Pico brew. Yeah, it's not. It doesn't radiate heat. It's not like you're boiling. There's no steam really coming off of it. So that's the problem with brewing is that the house fills with steam. So
it's good for your sinuses.
It's great. Yeah. During the winter.
Yeah.
But my apartment's at 4,000 degrees now.
Yeah.
So if I was going to boil there, it would not be a happy thing.
But a couple of things are interesting about the things you chose to brew for the next weekend. It's both that savior of not having that heat up our apartment crazy. But you brewed what you're going to serve on Saturday, this Saturday or Friday. That's insane. Saturday morning.
Well, what's the name of her book again?
Speed Brewing. And I do actually believe in these. I mean, it is a little crazy, right? And I am fermenting them. So all three are being fermented with champagne yeast. I'm just using Red Star, either the yellow packet or the blue packet. One is called Cuvée and the other is called Premier, I think.
Cuvée is a champagne yeast as well. I always thought it was a white wine yeast. I didn't know it was a quick chewer like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
So why champagne yeast?
Well, because champagne yeast is tolerant of a wide variety of temperatures, and it tends to not give off the weird off flavors that ale yeast can give off.
Off flavors, just like your opinion, man. You mean like just byproducts?
That's true, but it doesn't. I find that it doesn't tend to give. Now, granted, I'm always fermenting lower alcohol beverages, so definitely things that are under 4%. I actually diluted the cider a little bit. I made a 2.5 gallon batch, which will go in our 2.5 gallon keg. And I only had 2 gallons of apple juice, just store-bought apple juice, no preservatives.
With an OG of 1050.
Yes. And I didn't want to open another gallon of apple juice to use just half a gallon because I knew anyway. So, and I wanted to try a lower alcohol cider anyway. Mm-hmm. So I actually just watered it down with filtered water. And then, of course, I made a tea with, I peeled ginger, grated it, and then made a tea with that. And then
awesome.
I had rhubarb actually from last year that I had chopped up, blanched, so just a really quick like boiling water dip. And then I had...
You froze it. And
But I sucked the air out of it with that...
Vacuum sealed.
Yes, I vacuum sealed it. So it has been... It's kept really nice. Anyway, so I actually had ended up not using that. I might have missed rhubarb season this year since I was out of town.
So you boil it, you take the liquid out, and then you
vacuum seal it.
No, I actually didn't boil it. I just blanched it, really. I kind of just did a dip.
So that's just really just for sanitation?
Yeah.
And then you vacuum seal it. Vacuum sealers, people.
Yeah.
Awesome things.
Yeah, they are great. They're great not only for hops, but also for if you want to buy fresh fruit or vegetables during the year and you want to keep them really nice with no freezer burn.
Yep. For smoothies.
Yes. Or to make beverages. Yes. Either way.
Smoothies are a beverage.
But that cider, it's bubbling. Well, they're all three bubbling away.
What was the OG on the cider after you diluted it?
Oh, I brought my brewing notebook. I think it was 1038, though.
1038. So that's pretty low. The champagne yeast is probably like, what? That's it.
Yeah, they're happy.
I'm done.
So I ordinarily, if you have enough time, it's cool to use. I mean, we like to use ale yeast. We did a Nelson Sauvin dry hop cider for this Pour the Core Cider event that was on Saturday at the Brooklyn Expo Center in Greenpoint. So I sold and signed books. I did a seminar on how to make cider at home, and we poured cider. So Chris was very nice. I was out of town for 2 weeks.
Which is unusual for me.
No, yeah, you're
I know.
Nice.
You're
an SOB.
he made 2 ciders from the book, and...
They were delicious.
Did you learn anything? He cellared them.
Well, I learned that. Why have I been wasting my time with all this other stuff that takes up all my time? There's the time. And I made these ciders in less time than it took for you to do your lecture on that. The amount of time it takes to make cider is insanely little and really, really rewarding. A lot of times we get really into making homebrew and the ingredients that we're using. And I do believe that, in most cases, the highest quality ingredient is the most important thing. But just these straight up store-bought apple juice things,
no preservatives,
as long as there's no preservatives,
right.
It just ferments beautifully, and if you're flavoring them, they were awesome. I mean, we used we did a blackberry cider, and by we I mean me, because I was nice and well, you were gone, just blackberry puree from Goya products. Threw that in, had that ferment at the same time with that one was with champagne yeast. The other one was just straight up apple juice with what was it? Oh, and then we dry hopped it with Nelson Sauvignon hops, which was just awesome. And that one I did with Safehill 05. That one I did with Safehill 05. And both of them were ready to go in like just over a week.
Wow.
They were
they fine, no fusel alcohols?
Yeah, no.
Well, okay, temperature is still an important thing, except, I mean, I think that it might have had a little bit of fusel alcohol on the Safehill 05 if it was warmer weather when I started it. Like, it was 2 weeks ago, and we had a little cold front for a second.
Yeah.
Remember? And then for those first few days, it was important.
Yeah, and I think one thing, when I've gotten in a hurry, I have been able to, like, do the first 3 days of fermenting. So if you're speed brewing something, and like a cider or even a short meter, I think as long as you keep them at, you know, 66 to 60 degrees the first 3 days, right, then you can push them up to like 85 and they will, you know, that yeast will blow through. And not, because you're going to, I feel like you're going to get most of the aroma and flavor from those first 3 days. Those first 3 days are critical.
That's also where you're going to get fusel alcohols. Right, it's where you're going to get some of the strange flavors. Right. So the key is always to start cool. And especially with the Belgians, you just start cool and just let it go.
Yeah.
And then with time, it'll heat up from fermentation, then it'll finish out. One thing I noticed about Belgians, too, which are warm fermenting beers, warm meaning you can, most of the Abbey ales are 75 degrees Fahrenheit or higher.
Right. Saison, some of the Saisons you can push into
Saisons
80s,
can go up to
no
95 if you're using the DuPont strain. But I find that where I see more fusel alcohol is probably from the glucose additions that people will do because they're trying to dry out the beer and they don't add any more nutrient.
Ah.
So you need free amino nitrogen.
A great point, yes.
And if you are replacing malt, which has enough free amino nitrogen, with glucose, then you're going to actually get some those that hot flavor, which goes away with time. I mean, it does. The high molecular weight alcohols do smooth out with time, but who's got time?
Right.
and right? You didn't write slow brewing.
No.
That's right.
I mean, I respect, you know, right, slow brews. Sure. I did sours for a long time. Right.
So when we're talking, you know, fast and hot summers, if you want something to drink fast and, it's, you know, I've got hot conditions, you know, the keys are, you know, to brew low ABV beers, first of all,
sure,
so that you don't run the risk of these high fusel alcohols.
And experiment. And I think, you know, even if you're... So say that you live in New York City apartments like we do, that we don't have central air. Most of our apartment is not air conditioned. So I think, you know, if you can keep it in, it's easier, pretty easy to keep a 1 gallon bucket or a 2.5 gallon carboy or even a 5 gallon carboy cool for like 3 days.
Sure.
Standard tricks like the T-shirt and or, you know, keep that in a bucket and wet T-shirt or wet towel.
Or you were talking about that cool brewing, like
the cool brew bag. Cool brew bag, which is
insulated bag.
It's zippers and it's collapsible. So when you're not using it, it stores pretty flat, and it can fit actually two carboys, right?
It can fit two carboys. Yeah, the thing's giant.
And you're keeping
when it's open,
you're keeping it cool with frozen soda bottles. So it's pretty easy to pretty easy and inexpensive. Yeah.
Although what we sell the most of during the summer is the Saison yeasts.
Yeah.
And you should pitch cool with a Saison, let it go warm. But, you know, people are like, no temperature control. I'm like, Saison. And the cool thing about Saison is such a strong flavor yeast that comes out, so unique, that it kind of is good no matter what. I really can't say I've ever had a Saison that was like, oh, no, you screwed this Saison up. You know, the one thing is the DuPont strain, the Belgian Saison, can get stuck. Mm-hmm. It's notorious for getting stuck about 1030, 1.030, because it's fermented too cool. And even Y's website says, make sure you get it up about 90 degrees, which is pretty freaking hot. But I've never really tasted off flavors from those because they kind of are this complex thing, so I guess it's not there.
Yeah.
We're drinking a Saison right now. We're drinking a grapefruit Saison that was made at my store.
It's really delicious.
Mm-hmm. And we fermented this probably about 75.
What's ABV
in French? 6% would be my guess.
And at your store, you have fermentation temperature. You have a room that stays at 67?
We have a room that stays at 67. We also have a lagering tanks that we use for lagering. But the cool thing is that we have a basement. During the summer, the basement's probably about 80, so we make saisons and leave it not in the cool room. Mm-hmm. During the winter, it's about 58 degrees. We make kolsches.
Nice.
So we make kolsches and steam beers. And so it's like, oh, kolsch season. Let's ferment. And then the lagering tank's fun. That's, if you have a way of keeping something cold or cool during the summer, then make lagers. They're just so fun, and they're just such good beers. So yeah. I'm a big fan of Vienna lagers.
The hard thing is, like, by the time you know that you want a lager, it's too hot to make a lager.
Yeah.
So you got to plan for your lagers in April.
Right? So I keep forgetting about the boiling thing. Boiling's a hot
thing. Yeah, it's hot. I mean, I don't want to. Our kitchen's probably sitting around 85 right now. It's actually not as hot as it will be.
That's one of our taglines at the store for the brew on premises is boil without boiling, because we have industrial air conditioners in the store. Right. So we can actually boil and you can do it fine.
That's why we're going to keep Nelson Sauvin hop cider in our our kegerator the entire summer.
Great.
That hop in particular it's
you don't
just
even
insane.
Love that hop in beer.
I love it right there. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I have a love-hate relationship Nelson Sauvin.
Well, it's got that white wine thing going on, so I can see
it's
how
great
really
with
nice.
The apples. Really, yeah. And the apples, really, yeah. Really great. And yeah,
it's really nice.
And SEMA, I think we're going to keep variation of SEMA on draft as well, which is fermented lemonade.
So. I missed the water. Is that what it is? Sugar, mm-hmm. Sugar lemon yeast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we're starting. I just got a new kombucha SCOBY since I let mine go last year. Mm-hmm. But I got several new kombucha SCOBYs, so we'll be having kombucha again. And then I'm going to order some water kefir crystals or grains as well.
What temperature do they ferment at?
Actually, those are pretty heat tolerant as well. Kombucha is a little easier because it's not so generally, like in the winter when I'm doing kombucha, it'll in our well depending it might take 2 weeks, like mm-hmm. if you're fermenting things in the 60s, but if you're keeping kombucha in like the upper mid to upper 70s, it'll usually be happy up to around like 84-85.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. And the flavor's still good, and you get
it just turns over super fast. Yeah, so I can make quick. I can make nice drinkable kombucha in about 4 days in the summer. Water kefir again is pretty tolerant, up to around I think 80-82, but it turns over really quick. You have to pay attention to that, like every 24 to 48 hours. So that takes a little bit more upkeep, but it's really easy to do and it's a beautiful drink. Not everyone likes kombucha, although also I would say if you're making kombucha at home, it's super easy. Kombucha is just a fermented black tea, sweet black tea. It has some acetobacter that's somewhat of a primary flavor.
And if you like sour beers, a lot of people like them because they like sour beers, or there's an interesting crossover, and we've been talking about doing some experiments and making some faux sours by blending it with kombucha.
Oh, wow.
And we've had several commercial things that have done that.
Well, we did. There's one.
Right. Lambrucha put out by...
there's one in the book.
That's what I'm getting to. That's exactly what I'm getting to. And so you
fun.
Do a primary fermentation with the kombucha, which will get you to 1.5 ABV, right? And then you hit it with more sugar and hit it with champagne yeast, so you get the flavor of the kombucha, and then you get the booze.
Oh, wow. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
But that's no malt. That's not like a beer.
It's just a boozy kombucha.
Booze-bucha.
It's a booze-bucha, but you have a faux alternate, a faux Flemish red as well. So
I made a Belgian brown.
On this show.
I just made a Belgian brown, and then I did a cherry kombucha with, and then blended the two. I think there were some oak chips in there. Anyway, I haven't made it since last year when I was writing the book. But I'd like to play with that again, do some more kombucha, because I haven't actually played with doing a blonde. So do like a Belgian blonde, even a sessionable Belgian blonde, and then blend that back with kombucha. But if you don't like kombucha, I think kombucha is more controllable than people think.
I thought you said more controllable than people. And that'd be true, too.
Yeah, probably.
Never try to ferment a person.
Water kefir is an alternative because it's not, there's virtually no acetic. So it can be tart. It's more of a lacto tartness. But anyway, those are all both very nice beverages.
Speaking of acetic acid, I'm making... apple cider vinegar in my house right now.
Oh, yeah, nice.
And I found a really simple recipe where you just cut up apples, throw it in with water and sugar, and just let it sit. And then after a week, it's supposed to be hard cider, and then you're supposed to bottle it and allow the acetobacter to get in there. But I checked it after a week, and I don't think there was any yeast available. So I just threw in some bread yeast that I had in the fridge, and it right away fermented. It's actually already going sour now.
Awesome.
So I'm going to bottle it up, and I'm very excited because – apple cider vinegar is expensive, and we use a lot of it for like everything. I mean, I use it in my hair. We use it all over the place. And Carla, my girlfriend, was like, make this. You are a fermenting person. And we didn't use organic apples, so I'll do it with organic apples for stuff that we drink, because we actually drink it too.
Yeah, and we've actually had cider that we didn't like, or that we just let go, and that has turned into cider.
Apple cider. Some of the best apple cider I've had ever is this cider we forgot about.
Yeah.
Yep. The vinegar.
It's all about the quality of the apples, really.
Do you remember when you did the mead thing at my store?
Yep.
That was like in September, right, or October? Mm-hmm. It was a while ago. I did a cider demo then, and I just never touched that cider. It's a gallon of cider in my cool room that I've done nothing with. I have no idea what it tastes like. So that's something I should get into
check,
bottle.
Yeah, check on it.
Yeah.
With that, John LaPala, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having
today.
Me, guys. It's always a pleasure.
We will see you on Saturday, June 27th. Covenhoven, run by Bill and Molly. Bill is a high school teacher, a bass player. We get along musically quite well.
Hey, you wrote the theme song for this show, right?
I didn't write it. Chris Berry and I played it in a band.
Oh, okay.
Chris Berry,
you.
Chris Berry and Pangea. Yeah.
That's you.
And stuff. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that song. It's in my head all the time.
Oh, hey,
that song right there.
That one.
We'll be back next Monday with
Fomentabad.
Thanks, guys.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.